So Matt, somehow I've quit smoking and it's actually made me my health worse.
Well, there's a lesson in there.
Don't quit. Never quit anything.
Yeah, only quitters quit, Tom.
Yeah, the perseverance of the human spirit is not extending to my lungs right now, so.
Never quit being awesome.
Yeah, never quit being awesome. How are you? It's been a while since we recorded last.
Has it? I don't know. I've been working on my book. Done a couple of days sorting images out for the book, so that's coming together very excitingly. The sun is shining. I've mowed my lawn for the first time this year. That's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, the hole that has been in my roof or the ceiling of my bedroom is being fixed next week. So the era of me sleeping on the sofa for 2.5 months is coming to an end. Finally.
What about the hole in your heart?
That'll never be fixed.
Is that repaired?
No. But if we want to talk about this on like a real philosophical level, that will never be healed. Yeah, I shaved off my beard as well. And I have been told that I look like a very, like, you know, one of those discreet gay magazines in the 80s that's like mechanics physique enthusiast. Yeah.
You know who you look like? You look like the child with the moustache in Spaced that was playing in the episodes where Mike and Simon Pegg's character, Tim, are sitting on the branch. And there's a little child with the moustache. That's you.
Matt, you have to remember I was born in 1995. I've never seen Spaced.
All the better for it.
But you're very welcome to Beneath the Skin, the show about the history of everything, told through the history of tattooing. As always, I am one of your hosts, Thomas Amani, and I'm joined by my esteemed co-host, Dr. Matt Lauder. And we're joined by a guest. Matt, would you like to introduce our guest?
Well, they can introduce themselves, but they are Carole from Berlin, who's amazing for all the reasons we'll get into, has a really interesting set of takes and practices and experiences on running tattoo shops. And I think, like, you know, the Berlin scene at the moment is obviously very interesting, and the German scene is very interesting at the moment. So Caro's got a really interesting set of takes. So I'm really looking forward to talking to them. Yeah. Hi, Caro.
Hi.
I know you're not actually in Berlin, are you? You're not actually in Berlin. I knew that.
Yeah. Well, my pronouns are she, her, and I live in Hamburg.
Oh, okay. But yeah.
Yeah.
I knew you were in Hamburg. I was saying that.
Yeah. I moved to Hamburg in 2020, but I think a decade in Berlin with regular visits still counts as having a foot in the door.
So, yeah. So tell us who you are and what you're like. Who are you? What's your story?
So
heavy sigh.
Yeah, I've been tattooing what, like 16 years now, and I've started really inadvertently. I never had the desire to tattoo people until meeting a person who was tattooing, and we fell in love, and he was like, give me a tattoo. And I was like, I'm going to tell my grandkids about that one. And never had the grandkids, but kept on tattooing. And yeah, I had the privilege of having a very comprehensive technical apprenticeship, soldering my needles, tuning machines, sterilizing, and all of these practices. And I'm still, deeply connected to the crafty side of our profession, I would say. There's a feedback loop. At the same time, I was studying cultural science and art and cultural production critique for, I think, 18 semesters in total. And so my academic background has informed my practices quite a lot.
Because you were one of the things you've been doing a lot, I want to talk to you about your kind of the current setup, actually, and your kind of radical tenderness approach to running a studio. But talk a bit more about that technical side, because one of the things I think you've been really interested in recently is sharing, you know, kind of dyeing techniques on making needles and all that kind of stuff, right? Because you're sort of one of the few people I know of your generation of tattooing who actually kind of was able to learn and bothered to learn those kind of, you know, real hands-on techniques for machine building and needle building and stuff.
Yeah, I think it was actually thanks to Indy, if I remember right, from Brussels, who one day we were soldering together. You know, before I used to do this as like among colleagues and friends and, oh, you want to learn? Come by. I'll show you some. We'll solder together for a day. And then Indy was like, why wouldn't you be interested in setting up like a little workshop so I can invite some people? And then that's how I started like giving a bit more formalized workshops. And it's actually interesting because before I was always like putting the word out like, hey, if anybody wants to learn, I'm really happy to share. And like for me, I come from like a DIY squat background. So I've not necessarily thought about like making money off these workshops. For me, it was like, yeah, we're in this together. Let's do this. Let's exchange. And I really love like this sort of technical shop talk, like, oh, wouldn't you try this spring on that machine? And don't you think that this will work, you know? And it's, yeah, I'm quite sad, I would say, that that nowadays this has become less and less possible because people are lacking the knowledge. And so, yeah, it's kind of become a mission of mine to remind people that this is a craft and that there are more things to it. And I also appreciate the sort of industrialization of our profession where things are readily available and we can get them and they're already done. But then I would want to know how to make these things myself beforehand, you know, like I don't want to. I'm not against any part, you know, like I think this whole discourse, and I think this is something that's on my mind. It's been on my mind lately a lot. This whole thing of, oh, these young pen tattooers, these corona tattooers, you know, and I really don't like this sort of hating on this part or that part. I think that all things, I have a matching tattoo for that, like, and, you know, it's both things can have to be possible at the same time. Like, I can, like, it's not my case, but I would also tattoo with a pen, with a cartridge that's ready made. But I also want to be able to take a coil and put a metal tube in it and have a needle that I've made, you know?
So where does that come from, that interest in the technical side of things, though? Like, because it's not something that's shared by many of your peers. Like, this is what I kind of want to get into, I suppose, with you. Like, what is it about your approach that makes you interested in that, and what is it you think that why other people aren't so interested in it?
I think at first during my apprenticeship I was forced to you know, and it wasn't like, you know, in the beginning all you want to do is like be with people and tattoo and have like, you know, this also like this very like experiences full of adrenaline, I want to say. And then with the time and the experience, you know, like soldering needles and then tattooing with these needles has taught me a lot about the needle and has also informed my creative practice. It's not like these are two things that exist independently from each other. Like, I look at a needle and then sometimes, and what I really like is actually, like, I think, I mean, this is another thing, like, I think a lot of my work is error based. I really appreciate the errors, and I do not want to create. I don't want to imitate any other medium. I want to make the medium, the needle in the skin, very visible in what I do. And so, if I make a needle that's maybe not perfect, it will have a certain scratchiness or a certain effect, and then, you know, changing the angle a little bit, and then this will happen, and you're like, oh wow, I have an effect that I've never seen before. Maybe I should like make this error something usual, you know? And so, yeah, it's something that gives me a lot more possibilities, I would say, aesthetically.
I think it's really interesting in what you said first about like the sharing of information and learning and the craft element of it, and also this kind of artistic philosophy. It feels very kind of anarchic in a way that tattooing isn't anymore, like, obviously because one, things are readily available, but I think something that we'll probably talk about later in the episode, that the flow of information around tattooing is both either mediated by learning on YouTube or going down a real traditional route of, oh, I'm going to be taught by someone in a shop. Whereas it feels like you're conceptualizing it as this intentional thing, but also is outside the boundaries of what we kind of already know.
Yeah, my question would be, has this ever existed? You know, I think like information in tattooing has always been notoriously difficult to get a hold of. And to meet a person who is willing to mentor you, and not only mentor you by saying, here's a machine, now go at it, you know, because this is also a lot of the apprentices I have seen have learned like that actually by themselves, and then maybe getting a little information here and there, but they had to work for it. And yeah, coming from this like squat culture, DIY, anarcho-political background, yeah, this is definitely something that has influenced my way of like, yeah, sharing knowledge and teaching. And right now, and it's really interesting, and I think, you know, I just turned 40, and right now I'm like, is this really how like good tattooers become themselves, you know? Because like we've had a conversation with some friends recently where it's like, no, we need to make them suffer. In the end, that's the only thing that works. Like, you know, we tried, like me and a friend, like Nikos in Paris, we were like, hey, we tried being nice and we tried like, you know, giving it, like giving everything, but maybe we have to be assholes and maybe we need to like kick the chair while people are working, you know? And this is like, I think there is a truth to both approaches.
And I think it's interesting because there's an intentionality around adding friction back into the process, both artistically but technically as well, in terms of like you saying, like the needle isn't like 100% perfect or kicking the chair or trying to create art that's like outside of the bounds of, you know, learning in a traditional apprenticeship or from other artists and applying it directly to your own, trying to do something that other people aren't doing in a way that's a bit maybe more artistically true to yourself, if I'm correct.
Yeah. I think like going back to my journey, because I never drew. I mean, I was like, you know, I did like before going to uni, I did like a tailoring apprenticeship and I was making jewelry. And so there was a creative practice that I had, but the blank piece of paper has always been something that gave me anxiety. And so I was never drawing. And then suddenly the person who just did not want to pick up a pencil was supposed to pick up a machine and tattoo people. Like there was a huge challenge to my self-confidence. And I felt like a total fraud. And I was like, why am I the person that gets to have this apprenticeship and that gets to do these things when really I'm just shit, you know? And at the same time, my mentor was already doing like abstract stuff. And I was always saying, you know, it's about composition and good taste and not about the for me, well, in that sort of graphic tattooing, and not especially about the capacity of figurative drawing or realistic drawing. And and so for me, like really coming to my own took a long time. And realizing what I'm doing is 100% authentic to me. And then from there, I think I could really start developing, the whole thing in a broader kind of way. And I mean, I think I'm still like every time a person leaves my studio, I'm just like, maybe they hate it, you know? And I'm still anxious. And I think, I never really want that to go away because I think that it keeps me on my toes. And a little bit of self-doubt, it's not the worst.
I think maybe it could be a case that, you know, they have unlocked a certain part of their creativity working in a space that doesn't have a formalized kind of idea of what tattooing should be. And a point that I think I'll circle back to later on the episode when you brought up abstract art is something that, for anyone listening, I do want to talk about it, that like abstract art and tattooing is something that like has weirdly become formalized in and of itself, which has kind of created this weird paradox. But Matt, you seem like you want to say something, so I'll hand it back to you.
Yeah. So this is sort of brings up so many things that we've been talking about and thinking about, stuff we talked with Adam about, for example. I mean, I guess like the obvious follow-up from that question is like, how do you see your your tattooing fitting into your wider practice, Caro? Because, again, I think so much of what is so interesting and exciting about the way you work is you do have this kind of deep empathy, and you have this deep kind of concern and kindness for your clients and for your industry. So is that something which you had before you got into tattooing, or is that something that tattooing has developed within you? And then how does the tattooing sort of fit into the wider scheme of all the things that you were and are still doing artistically and creatively?
So like when I started dating my mentor back in the day, he really wanted me to become a tattooist. He really wanted to have a tattoo wife, you know, after, like, I mean, inspired by the Lu family, you know, there was a thing of like the nomading hippie traveling and being outside of the biker sort of frame and tattooing and doing this together. And I think it's you know, like I said, like the drawing part was not what got me into it, but then being with him during sessions and really heavy, painful, full black, you know, like 6-7 hours, and seeing people in pain and also hearing from him what people would share. And I was like, what? Like, you just met this woman and she told you about how she got raped? Like, I was really like, I didn't believe it at first. And it was the level of intimacy that I wanted to have with people. And my dad had died like a year and a half before that. And I felt that with tattooing, I had found a tool to access my pain and to be allowed to suffer, because I felt quite alone with that. You know, like, yeah, you can talk to your friends, but nobody really can get to that sort of pain with you. But tattooing and the blood and the physical sort of relief that comes from it was able to get me there. And I think that through experiencing physical pain in that way, I also got a new way and a better way to deal with my internal pain. And I think I was always very fascinated with psychology and human nature and a deep, intimate connection with people. And so all of this kind of came together. And yeah, like you said, like I continue using radical tenderness as proposed by La Pocha Nostra. And I'm really inspired by this concept. And I think like it was something that already existed in my life before, but then once somebody mentioned it to me, I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm about. And I think that, you know, like having empathy and kindness, that's what I really appreciate about the radical part. It's not only about being nice. It's also about being brutal. And it's also about, it's taking responsibility for the brutality, whether that's physical or it's in your honesty, it's in feedback questions. And I really love people's stories. I think that I'm best when I get to translate a story and a feeling and these cosmic connections into a piece of, yeah. I don't know if we call it art, Matt. I don't know about how you would see it, but
that's a whole other episode. I actually saw La Pocha Nostra perform a couple of weeks ago in San Francisco, La Pocha Nostra with Annie Sprinkle, which was quite an evening, I have to say.
I was a little bit envious, I have to say.
It was, but you know, I was thinking about you actually, obviously, while I was there, because I know what an important part of your, you know, the kind of language you use to talk about what you're doing is, it comes from their work. I mean, you did a workshop with them, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I was studying.
Can you talk about that?
I was studying in Barcelona at the Museum of Contemporary Art, and I did like a sort of this whole cultural production critique master's there. And during my year, they came for like a 3-day workshop, but I was already writing my master's, and I could not get out of my house, you know. And then my professor was like, hey, if they come back, I really want you to participate. And I want to invite you to join the next edition's workshop. And then luckily, I was on holiday. I had some money. It was right around the time we met, actually. It was the same travel when we met in Paris. And then from Paris, I went down to Barcelona and we had this workshop for a week. And I met some people there. I met a performance artist, Marina, who you also know. And
she was my PhD student.
And we were we had this moment during one of these exercises that was radically tender. And then I later, because she was writing her thesis on pedagogical strategies in performance art. And then she told me, this is radical tenderness. And I'm like, this is what? And during the workshop, I became friends with Danielle and Dani, who are not members of La Pocha anymore, but they then wrote the Manifest of Radical Tenderness in the same year, I think, and I did the German translation. And I've been kind of a witness of the Manifest, and I've been spreading the Manifest and giving it to my friends and hanging it into shops all over the place. I think just radical tenderness as a word already has all these components, and then you can fill it with whatever example of radical tenderness that you've experienced.
So what does that mean in practice? If there's a good summary or a good example to explain what that means in practice for you, at least, I'm sure it'll be different for other people, but.
Well, in tattooing, I would say that there's a balance between the part where I hurt people and where, you know, I'm not a sadist, but it's still, I think, difficult sometimes to have people suffer. And I have a great capacity of holding pain of people. And so if people want to go to a place where they are really exhausted by the pain in the end, then I can go there with them. But at the same time, I'm not going to push them over the edge, you know? And I think this is, you know, this is just very practical. And at the same time, the way that I tattoo is that I meet people once for a design appointment, just to meet each other, to talk about the story, to kind of understand where the tattoo is supposed to go. And it's also a moment where we gain trust for each other, you know, and I don't think that it's only one way. I don't think that the client only has to gain trust for the tattooer, but I also have to trust them that this is that they want to do this with me and that they choose me. And that's also why I don't take a deposit, for example. I do a design session. I tell people, this is what it's going to cost you. If you want to come back, you're welcome. If you don't, you don't have, no obligation. You don't have to call me. You don't have to tell me anything. But if you want, you can get back in touch. This leads, for example, to I never get stood up. People always cancel, you know? And I attribute it to this process because I open a door and then it's their choice to come, you know? And so, yeah, in many little things in this process, I think the radical tenderness plays some sort of role in that kind of way, you know?
And you're building a relationship with customers of trust and mutual respect. I mean, I think what's interesting about that, I think, is that a lot of artists, I mean, Adam talked about sort of similar anxieties, you know, when he started out his apprenticeship about you know, mediating people's pain. Adam McDade, who we had on the show, who did his PhD on by practice on documenting his apprenticeship. But I think actually thinking about the tattooers that I know that have been in the industry for decades, I think most of them have something of that without necessarily being aware of it. I mean, I know mindfulness and being aware of what you're doing is a part of the process here, but I think a lot of people that are tattooing decades after starting sort of have some of that empathy and you know, capacity for, as you said, kind of holding others' pain for good or for ill, somehow kind of, you know, intuitively or naturally somehow, I don't know. But there's something really interesting to be said about the way that you vocalize and explain that and you know, I think encourage others to be aware of that in themselves, because yeah, I mean, it can be exhausting, can't it, that practice for you?
Yeah, and I think it's funny, by coincidence I met Patrick Hüttlinger once at a concert, and we got into talking, and then he was a bit tired at that time, and he was like, yeah, you know, people should just shut up. And I was like, well, maybe you should take a break and have some holidays, you know? And then the next day he texted me and he was like, okay, I arranged my workspace and now I'm going to take a break and I need some, you know? And I think that also, yeah, the radical tenderness also extends to yourself, and you need to like take care and like take care of your own boundaries. And I think that's also part of the practice. And I think you're totally right by saying like, there's this certain je ne sais quoi, what enables people to continue over decades. You know, there's lots of people who tattoo for a couple of years and then they're like, hey, I think I'm going to try something else, you know? And I think that's totally fine. But to really, yeah, make this a life's thing, I think you need to have a certain baseline in human relationships.
I think it's kind of the... Like, Matt, what you're describing is like anyone who's been in the industry for a long time has that kind of empathy and I suppose has the tenderness, whereas that conscious intentionality in practicing it is the radical part. It's like taking this kind of mindfulness, if you could call it that way, or like this truly holistic empathetical, if empathetical is even a word, approach, and intentionally weaving it not just through how you deal with clients in the session, but like throughout the entire practice, both as a tattoo artist and practitioner, but also like as a person and in your kind of abstract artistic ways, I suppose.
I mean, I'm also interested in how that also relates to squatting, actually, because one of the things I was telling Tom about the other day, I was looking at some old issues of Tattoo Buzz, one of the trade magazines from the UK back in the 80s and 90s. And at the end of the 80s, Alex Binney had started tattooing, and he was working out of a squat. And that really, really, really irritated like some of the old guard that were kind of very, and, you know, for good reason, kind of, you know, really sort of trying to crack down on what they called scratches and trying to really, you know, make a kind of claim for what being a professional artist meant and what a clean studio looked like. And the fact that this guy who had a kind of art background, who had a kind of, you know, approach to tattooing that I think, you know, has some of this in it as well, was sort of deemed to be completely beyond the pale. And then, you know, I don't think it's any coincidence that 3 or 4 years after, he was literally kind of called worse than a scratcher in the pages of Tattoo Buzz. He was, they gave him a full page to write an article about opening Into You, this new kind of tattoo studio. But I think, like, you know, there's also this anxiety, and I know you've encountered it, right, Caro, between the way things are done, the way things should be done, in terms of, you know, client relationships, taking deposits, but also in terms of what tattoo spaces look like. And this more kind of DIY, you know, bottom up kind of way of approaching the industry. That's something I know you thought about, because you're very careful about and very, you know, activist about hygiene and about technique. So how might you square, or how have you squared in your career this kind of DIY approach, this kind of amateur, you know, this, no, amateur is not the right word, this kind of like, you know, particular philosophical approach to tattooing with the limits or the traditions of how other people think the industry should run?
Well, I think I have seen more hygienic errors done in tattoo shops than in squats. You know, I think, well, you know, like we saying, there's no technical determinism, and it's about your knowledge and applying knowledge. So if you know how to be clean, you can be clean in a kitchen. It will take you a full day of cleaning and arranging and disinfecting. But I think that a lot of people go into a tattoo shop and they just assume it's clean because it's a tattoo shop. And, you know, there's era. But yeah, I think, I mean, my mentor was really adamant about not working in a tattoo shop and not being part of the scene and not being part of tattoo magazines and all this sort of industry. And then when we separated, I had a friend who was working in a shop around the corner, and I was like, hey, maybe I'm ready to take my practice into a studio. Cause I mean, I had already been working for 7-8 years, I think. But I was quite scared that it would take away from the intimacy and the relationship that a private space enables better, I would say. And that's sure, for sure true. But also to find the trust in myself that I can create intimacy and I can hold space also in a studio. And, you know, I think that it is different. But it also taught me a lot of things, going to work in a studio with colleagues, and also, like, yeah, having this team experience with the joy and the problems. But I think that, the idea of like how things have always been done and that's why we do them like this has always been a problem for me. And that's like from this sort of, I think, yeah, political background. I don't want to say punk because I never identified as a punk, but I would today a lot more identify with the philosophy of punk and the things that come with that. And I think that a big part of everything is taking responsibility, you know, and like me squatting a place is about me taking responsibility for the space. And it is, yeah, like being able to create something from scratch also means having to clean the toilets yourself and not somebody else doing it. So, you know, there's like, with the freedom comes a lot of like discipline as well. And
that's proper what is meant by DIY, right? That is the kind of do it yourself attitude. Like, actually do it. You actually have to do it.
Yeah. That's also my problem today, you know, because I do appreciate DIY, but I don't appreciate people just doing things and just tattooing without asking the proper questions before. And especially in terms of hygiene, like, I mean, you know, it's done for pierces, but the APP has a $25 amazing class on hygiene. So there is no excuse of not knowing. Like, it has been provided for you. You do not even have to research or read a book. Like, it is there in really simple terms as well, done for people who do not have an academic background. And I have some like medical microbiology books that I went through. And that's where actually like me studying philosophy came in really handy, because reading a text where I understand only half the words, no problem, you know?
Hey, are you enjoying the show? If you really like Beneath the Skin and you want to help support us, you can do so on Patreon. For little as £5 a month, you can help make this show possible, help us buy research materials. So if you like the show and you want to support us, consider kicking us a few quid a month, and you'll get everything from bonus episodes to Q&As, and you can even vote on what tattoo I'll get when we reach a certain subscriber count. Matt, have you got anything to say?
You should really definitely fund the Patreon, because tattoo history is massive, right? Deep, wide, complicated. We're covering some big hit topics on the main feed, but on the Patreon subscriber only feed, we'll be getting into some really more interesting niche deep topics you don't want to miss out on. And honestly, the chance to kind of decide what Thomas gets on his body is probably just a once in a lifetime opportunity. Subscribe, chuck us a few quid, don't miss out on the chance to ruin Thomas's body forever.
I was gonna say that I think your whole approach to like tattooing and squats versus you know, studios and the kind of defining of what space means and what constitutes like a space tattooing suitable for tattooing, and I feel like people are going to roll their eyes at this, but it's extremely Hegelian in a way. It's creating this dialectic between like what is a tattoo space and what isn't, and is kind of come back to that like radical tenderness, is that intentionality of like you are defining the space yourself as well. And I wonder, you mentioned kind of the DIY thing of what are really the boundaries of kind of what you should do yourself and what you shouldn't do yourself.
I think, you know, like if people want to tattoo themselves in their home, they can do whatever they want. And I don't judge any like shitty tattoo. Like, I think that there is a dimension to the tattoos that go way beyond the visible and whether it's good or bad tattooing, you know? And I mean, that's also another question I think of, like, the visual history of tattooing over the last 20 years. Maybe we can talk about that later. But then going from, oh, I picked up a tattoo machine on eBay and now I'm going to give all my friends hepatitis B, you know? Yeah, I have to say, like, I would judge that and be like, yeah, maybe don't, you know? And I, for me personally, that's something where I encourage people because, like, I mean, imagine, like, how bad would you feel if somebody came up to you and be like, hey, you gave me hepatitis? I don't know, you know? If somebody came up to me and said, hey, I don't like the tattoo you did. Okay, yeah, it's a shitty first tattoo and maybe we can do something about that later, you know? But yeah, I think there are things with different consequences and that's important. And it's, like I said, you know, like hygiene classes are really affordable, available, like everybody can do them. And I mean, I live in Germany in the land of the DI norms and we don't have regulation on hygiene and it's just like freaking me out, you know?
Yeah, well, we talked to a materials chemist the other day about tattoo inks and how even the ones that have labels on them, what's actually in them is not what's on the label. So this is a global problem. This guy from a university in the US who recently did some spectroscopic analysis of like commercially available tattoo ink brands, and their studies revealed that like what was actually in the inks didn't match the labels, like in nearly every single commercially available tattoo ink they checked. Absolutely terrifying. I mean, I wonder, like, this also brings up something that I was thinking about yesterday, about the responsibility of the client as well, because so much of this is about relationships, right? And this came up in the context of so Lauren Treacle Tat, who's Treacle Tats on YouTube, who does a lot of kind of tattoo content. She had a interesting video about a woman in the US who got a tattoo that was spelt wrong, and that was the beginning of the story actually, and was very cross. I mean, the tattoo itself was terrible, the artist was really kind of shitty and dismissive, and there's you know issues that, there's also kind of racism going on because the client was a woman of color and the artist was a white woman, and so it all sort of went viral on TikTok. It was a whole internet drama.
Was it the artist that was crying then? Like
that's
love
the one
conquers
you've seen
all.
That.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
The
I
one.
See. And I yeah. also saw the tattoo, and the spelling is not the problem.
No. Exactly. So I think like I had an interesting sort of set of thoughts on that, which, well, I don't know if they're interesting, but I was interested about that argument because Lauren had a really kind of quite hardcore take on this, which was like, it is the tattooist's responsibility to be a professional and offer a professional service and they should know how to spell. And I was thinking like, I don't know. I always think of a tattooing inherently, unless you're tattooing yourself, as some kind of collaborative effort, right? And I think if the tattooist has like shown you the stencil, if you then produce a good tattoo of that stencil, you also have some responsibility in that. And I think, I don't know how that fits, what your take on, I mean, on that whole issue of like the other side of the coin, what's the role of the client when you're tattooing them in this kind of relationship that you're building with them? Because I think that's a kind of interesting and a complicated conversation.
Yeah. I think, you know, I mean, I think a spelling error is like, you would be like, I'm really good at spelling. Yeah. But I have not produced a spelling error, but nearly. And I realized like, wow, writing and tattooing is not the same as writing on a piece of paper, you know? So like a lot of compassion from my side to all of the people. And there are many who have done spelling mistakes in tattoos, you know?
Yeah. This is Matt subtly taking a dig at me because I notoriously I'm a terrible writer.
It actually wasn't that, but it will be now. You can
but I think it is really like, or it would be my goal to enable people to take as much responsibility as they can in the process, because I also think that it gives them can't think of the word right now.
I'm sure there's an incredible German compound word that describes exactly this.
For sure. They make the tattoo their own. And I've seen once I met a woman, amazing sleeve by one of the best French tattooers. And she was like, yeah, but there is like, here is not the color I wanted, you know? Like, that is really the first thing you have to say about this amazing sleeve that cost you 3,000 euros? Like, wow, you know? So it must have, like, and this for me is like a sign for the whole experience not being great, you know? And I've seen people with really shitty tattoos who love their tattoos, you know? So it's not like, you know, if you have, if you can, again, you know, take responsibility in the process, then a spelling error is not the problem. The problem is, how do we deal with a mistake? And like I said, I haven't done a spelling mistake, but I've done mistakes in tattooing and people have not been happy about it. And then, you know, like, yeah, like your stomach is between your knees and like, how do you deal with the shame and the guilt and then still being able to continue this relationship and trying to sort through a solution together? I think that's what makes the quality in the end. And to get back to the question of like power dynamic, like I do believe that the tattooist is always a little bit more responsible than the client. Because you enter a relationship that is not equal. I have the machine in my hand. I am the one who's dressed. You're the one who's undressed. All of these things in the space, you know, people come to your space. You're not going to their space. And I think these are all parts of the process that we need to take into consideration, you know. And if we can create a situation among equals, in that situation, amazing. But it is because we took the responsibility of our power advantage.
Yeah.
I think
I agree with that. I mean, I think that case was slightly complicated by, you know, all the other things that weren't the spelling error, which I totally think are the artist's fault. Although, you know, I sort of feel like, I feel sorry for people that end up with shitty tattoos through lack of knowledge in a way. But I think like if you're my take on the spelling thing, aside from everything else, was like, if these words are important enough to you to tattoo on your body, you should know how to spell them. that was kind of my take, you know?
Yeah. And also the knowledge that you have about the tattooer that you're getting it from is also your responsibility, you know?
Yeah. Within reason and what's available. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, like, and I like also I was thinking about again like hygiene and hepatitis and you know, like I also like from like a concept from the kink scene, like risk aware consent, you know, like if I consciously get myself into a situation where I risk getting hepatitis or ending up with a bruise or with a shitty tattoo. And I consciously say, hey, yeah, just go for it. You know, like getting a tattoo from an apprentice where you know you're not going to get a perfect tattoo, you are aware of this. And so you take responsibility for it. And then again, yeah, great for you. I don't want to patronize anybody and be like, no, you should never do this, you know. But the knowledge part is super important. And I think that it is. And I think that this is also like a problem for us tattooers today, that where do people find their knowledge today? It's on Instagram, it's on TikTok. And so it's about like outperforming an algorithm much more than providing real information or, you know, like showing yourself or the relationships that you build, because these are all things that are not very exciting for the algorithm, you know? And so again, like I'm following this one guy who's been tattooing a couple of years and he's like getting amazing traction because he's sharing tattoo knowledge. And I mean, you see the tattoos that he's doing and it's just like, yeah, really?
Yeah.
You know? But hey, good for him that he has the success that he has right now, you know?
I think a real niche for someone who hasn't really discovered their thing yet is do auto Christ, but for spelling. So everything is spelled wrong, but in a funny way.
I love auto Christ. I actually got tattooed by him, and I love him as a person as well. And I've defended him against all of the haters.
I will defend him till to no end. We will do an episode eventually about him. But I think maybe actually this brings me back to the point that I mentioned earlier is about abstract art. And obviously, Matt, you are a art historian, so you're probably much more definitionally knowledgeable than me. But it seems like in terms of tattooing and abstract art, what abstract means has, I think, come to mean a very specific type of black and gray representative realistic tattoos done of a weird collection of like items and objects. And I feel like the idea of like true abstraction is kind of gone into the ether. I wonder what your thoughts are on that, in a way that we've kind of definitionally defined what is abstract.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, right? Because this also comes back to actually what people actually want to get. And I think like stylistically, tattooing has been, and this is something we talked about as well, like tattooing's, everything's been possible in tattooing since about 2000, since like the mid to late 90s. Postmodernism brought to tattooing the opportunity to get anything, right? What Terry Eagleton calls depthlessness, right? There's you can kind of get anything you want tattooing you now. It doesn't really matter. But the sort of limit to that, and this is something that Spider Webb of all people was interested in the 70s, as early as that, was what true abstraction meant in tattooing. And he drew upon things like, for example, if you got tattooed by him, one of the things he'd do is he'd just tattoo the time on you, like the current time, because that's the kind of thing that the Fluxus artists were interested in, the relationship between chance and creative output. So, it's completely random what time you get tattooed by him, and it turns that abstract chance moment into a permanent piece of creativity. He also did these, the 100X tattoo that was one tattoo that crossed 100 bodies, which was a single small X on 99 people, and then a big X made up of 99 X's on one person. And that was conceived by him as like one continuous piece of work. So he was kind of playing with the form. That is confusing to people, and it is pretentious in a sort of 70s way. But it's also a sort of point. The other thing he used to do was he'd go to colleges and say to people, who wants a free tattoo? And everyone would put their hands up. And he'd say, okay, I'm going to tattoo your noses green. And then they'd be like, oh shit, no, I don't want that. So the sort of medium and the traditions of tattooing are quite limiting, when it comes to sort of what true abstraction might be. But I think the kind of thing that I find inspiring about what Caro's doing is actually, again, in this relationship, like you can create kind of chance and you can create abstraction in the encounter. You don't have to kind of predetermine it. And as you said, like so much of, if you Google image search like abstract tattoos, it's just going to be representations of brushwork or something. It's like a photograph of an abstract painting rather than something that in its output is truly abstract. I mean, the other example, which is sort of almost at the opposite end, is all of that hardcore, brutal black work stuff, which is abstraction of a kind but completely stripped of any kindness or intimacy or respect, and I think like squaring those circles is really difficult, which is why we don't see much of it. And maybe like Auto Christ is actually, and Jack, Jack Tattoos for Your Enemies is another one. There are artists who are within the limits of the tattoo form playing with what randomness and abstraction might look like. Scott Campbell as well. It's a few, but it's difficult because when people say they want abstraction, they don't always mean it, right, Caro?
Yeah, like for me, the first thing that came to my mind was I was trying one of those like tattoo apps. Like they asked me to give feedback, and then I made an account, and then I put up some things, and then I tried to look for abstract tattoos. And what I got was some aquarelle with like an elephant face, but only half of it, you know? And so like, yeah, it is an abstracted elephant, but is it abstraction? So I think that there's, to start with, there's a difference in that. And for me, what is interesting is to create things that you do not like associate with a representation. And I find it interesting because in that way, like tribal tattooing is also abstract, or a lot of it might be.
Yeah.
Like some of it is, some of it isn't, you know?
Yeah.
But to like, especially to our like eyes that we're not schooled in the language of representation that they have. And I think that if you look at how, I think with Alex Beeny, the sort of neo-tribal but more abstracted and like in a way voided of meaning.
Yeah.
You know? It was not anymore about the representation of things, whether this was a boat or this was a house. It was just about the beautiful form and the beautiful line on your body, and about like, I think it is more about bringing the attention back to the body and not to the image.
Yeah, and that's something that, like, you know, it's interesting that all of the artists who were who have done that kind of thing, you know, someone like Cliff Raven said similar things, like even Tom DeVita, who I don't think he went to art school, but he was certainly hanging out with, you know, the abstract expressionists, like he knew Franz Klein and stuff, for example. It seems like all the tattooers that discovered that and have rediscovered that over the past 40 or 50 years have, weirdly, most of them been to art school. You know, there's something interesting about that.
I was going to ask Caro as well, like, even a further form of extraction, abstraction, is the tattooing in and of itself being a form of performance of abstract art as well. I want to ask your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, like this, because for me, like the time like that spiderweb tattooed is not that abstract. It's not, it's like there is, it is representative,
yeah.
No?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Then the question is the randomness of it. Like, where does this come from and why do we get it? We do it just to get tattooed. And in that moment, the importance goes back to the moment of tattooing. And I think that, we can frame the tattooing process as a sort of performance. And it's to me, it's interesting because I like with the Pocha workshop, we did a performance at the end of this workshop. And then Marina asked me to assist her in a performance. And then 2 or 3 years ago, I saw this flyer here in Hamburg that was calling for people who had a connection to radical tenderness. And here I am again, ending up in a performance project. somehow like also inadvertently, I get to have a performance art practice of some sort. And
I think I called you a performance artist once and you denied that label.
Yeah. Well, maybe I kind of, you know, but this is also a question of self-confidence. Like, am I going to go out there and be like, hey, I'm a performance artist? Yeah, I don't know. But and we did a residency a couple of years ago in Milan, also with people from Studio Strauss in Jerusalem, and, you know, with this sort of noise DIY vibe with Servadio and the Londoner Italians. And I did a session with a person and a lot of people were like, oh yeah, this is going to be a performance. And then people came to see the performance. And I was kind of like, well, this is just a session, you know, but what we did was we projected images and sometimes moving images onto the body. And I just tattooed over some of the lines of each image. And in the end, it was like a back piece of kind of transposing of all of the images that we projected.
It's an incredible piece, that. I mean, for people that listening who don't know, like, Servadio's work is similar to that, right? He does stuff based on sound waves, or he was doing stuff based on sound waves at the time, similarly, right? Like, doing sort of generative abstraction, if you like, or but based on audio signals. Yeah. Is that right? Yeah.
And Yeah, and I find that very interesting because, like, with like it's the body of reverbs that Servadio does, and then also like some of the guys from Studio Strauss, they did some sort of like experiments, and they would always be like, "Oh yeah, but the tattoo was kind of just the result of the performance, you know." But they wouldn't frame the tattoo as an art piece or as like a respectable piece of some sort. And I kind of felt insulted because this was stuff that I would do in all seriousness in my tattoo practice, you know? And I was kind of like, okay, guys, like I'm insulted now.
This has long been that's long been a problem for performance art, right? Theory. Because I wrote about that in the context of Orlan, the French performance artist whose practice in the 90s included or was getting plastic surgery, and she got plastic surgery, as you know, Caro, in art galleries, you know, and had a huge kind of, you know, discourse, amazing sort of seminal set of pieces. But lots of the writing about her work at the time was like, the surgery is the performance, the outcome is not relevant. And I was like, but she's got to go and get on the bus. I mean, I don't know if Orlan gets the bus. She's a sort of grand figure of French art, you know what I mean? But like the product body exists in the world afterwards, and I think like that's a kind of limit of the way that performance art theorists think about performance, right? And I think that the problem of tattooing for that way of, you know, the way of thinking about performance, as you point out, is really limited and is you know, is belittling a bit to the work of the tattooer. And it also, ironically, for a practice that's meant to be connecting art and life, so to speak, like to deny the life part of it, or that you need the frame of performance to make it valid is really problematic.
And you need, like, I mean, but I think that's because like a lot of performance art also uses everyday practices, and then they need a stage for this to be a performance, you know? And so just wearing a tattoo day to day cannot be part of that. And I think like and I think that for me, that comes back to this idea, like I don't frame tattoos as like, because of my lack of practice on paper for me. And it's funny, like once somebody said to me, like, you're not a tattoo artist, you're a tattoo sculpturer. And I found that really interesting, because a lot of what I do is also like, it's, you can't see it from only one point of view. I find it really boring if you can see all of it from just one side. And so I need to move, the body needs to move. And also I try to make people, when I design on them, I try to make them move. A lot of people say it's like a gym class when they come to me, because I'm like, put your hands up, put your hands to the side, put them up, you know, because I want to see how those lines, they move and they break, and how they accentuate the body. And in that way, like they it's like making the body the focus and not the design on top of it, you know? And I think also what I wanted to say to what you said, Tom, with the what is abstract tattooing right now, and I find it really interesting. I'm asking myself, like, is it only because I'm getting older and I've been in this for so long that I've seen so many things that there's not so much anymore that's going to excite me? And is it just because of my viewing practice where I'm like, oh yeah, another line going over the arm like this and another brush stroke like that, you know? But I think what it comes back to is also like, what is the meaning? Like, what is this filled with? Where did it come from? You know? And like, I can, like, somebody can tattoo an X just like that, and Spiderweb can conceptualize the whole thing around that. And then that becomes meaningful, and it becomes something that I find, like, I find touching, and I can engage with. And it's this sort of superficial, flat sort of, what's this guy's name in Berlin? There's this philosopher who wrote a book on like the culture of flatness, you know, of like how, our computer screens and everything, it's, you know, it's kind of like a cultural critique of the superficiality of the moment. But I think that images that are superficial, they can be so deep, you know? And I think that, yeah, who Paul Valéry said, le plus profond c'est la peau, the deepest is the skin.
Yeah.
that's something that I relate to a lot. Yeah.
Seeing as like we're sort of coming to our, like, more or less where we normally finish, but I did want to get to talk to you a bit about your studio practice, because I think that's also a really important part of what you're doing. So, you know, people occasionally message me and say, hey, like, what's the history of setting up tattoo collectives, and like, how do we, you know, are there kind of ways of running shops? Like, you've put a lot of effort over the last few years, right, into setting up a new space, a space that's going to function in a way that's different to the way a lot of tattoo shops are running.
It's still a concept, because we didn't get the space that we applied for last year, but it's definitely my goal to make that happen in the next couple of years.
So can you talk a bit about what you want that to look like? Because you were sort of competing for a space, weren't you? Last year,
I'm part of a post squat collective here in Hamburg, which is called Gängeviertel, which is 12 old buildings that got squatted in 2009, and then thanks to political and economic circumstances, the buildings were transferred into a cooperative. And there's an association that takes care of like the cultural contents, let's say. And we competed for a space. We didn't get it in the end, but it was I have to say that it is because this would have been in this construct that I would have been able to afford it, because what the vision is, I can't afford that on a commercial contract. And so the idea is basically, it's just like, I would say it's me, but in space form. and I would love to have a space that kind of makes a connection. I mean, you know, with with room for tattooers to work like a normal shop, let's say, but also with space to give workshops, the way that I've been doing them. And then like I do machine tuning workshops and needle soldering workshops. And then last year at BMX, me and my friend Hai Lim, Ouch Tattoo, we started giving a freehand class that we didn't know was so popular. And and it's really interesting, you know, like, because for me, freehand is like, yeah, you take a pencil and then you draw, you know? And people are like,
simple,
but how, you know? Because the formalized culture is you draw on your iPad and then you print it and then the machine prints it for you. Nobody does hand stencils anymore. Like, what is this, you know? And I would want to have a space for workshops, but I would also want to have a space a little bit inspired by Tribal Act in Paris. You know, they were an association. They were curious people getting together with a library and just researching and like reflecting together on what is possible, you know, what can we do to the body, with the body, why do we do this? And, you know, and I think that's also like my academic background, like sharing all the books and all the thoughts that I've read about, you know, and kind of, yeah, bringing that knowledge to people. And I would love that to be a space where, you know, tattoo shops always have this thing like, I need to have a reason to go inside. Like, even I, as a tattooer of over 15 years, I'm like, can I really go, you know? But I would just want this to be a space where people can pick up a book and have a coffee and just, you know, chat with each other. And also a place for people who tattoo at home and who started tattooing with YouTube, for them to connect with each other and to exchange and be like, hey, what is this experience for you? How do you deal with this? You know, and kind of break down this barrier. Cause you know, like this, I find it so funny. I mean, Matt, you've been going on about this in many ways, no? Like how discourse repeats itself.
Yeah.
And how in like, I don't know, when was the first article that said now tattooing is not only for criminals and like sailors, you know?
Yeah. Like, late 19th century. I mean, the tattooers were already saying like about 6 or 7 years after tattooing even existed as a profession, like I liked it when it was underground, you know, like in the,
yeah. And the same thing is like with this whole scratcher thing, like, you know, they called Alex Beanie a scratcher and then they called me a scratcher and now I get to call the next generation scratchers. And I think that like we should much more focus on what unites us. And that's the love of like tattooing and body modification and, you know, all of these things than on who is tattooing where. And I mean, yeah, that's also like, you know, this my desire of sharing knowledge and bringing people together much more than dividing them by, yeah, kind of sort of these like social or professional hierarchies.
But I think the difference is, and it's important, and it's something that you talked about already when we've been chatting just now, is like, there is a difference, I think, between people who quote unquote just tattoo, you know, who buy the eBay machine, who buy the stick and poke kit and go ahead and kind of recklessly or thoughtlessly start tattooing people, either friends or you know, customers. And the same person who gets hold of a machine, who gets hold of but who has that deep respect and love to want to learn and want to be careful and want to, and I think, like as you said, like the line between those two things, it's always been more bright in discourse than in reality. So many incredible tattooers started out with machines they'd got somehow tattooing at home. You know, so many of the best tattooers that have ever lived did that.
Yeah, that's what I want to say. Like, just give them some time.
Yeah, it's about
like
attitude.
People, like, yeah, but then, like, you know, I think that like this idea of like the perfect apprentice who comes and who's all like hungry and dedicated and disciplined, like being an apprentice also means that you are going to learn these things, you know. And I think that there's always like a period where we have to be a little bit like, yeah, tolerant, because, you know, people are not born with this dedication, and I wasn't, you know, I can say that about myself. Like, my mentor was frustrated with me because I didn't solder enough needles and I didn't do this and I wasn't dedicated. And now I'm like, wow, yeah, he was right, you know? but I had the chance to learn, and I like, yeah, that, and I want to give that benefit of a doubt to other people. And the only way that they're going to get better is by learning something. And how are they going to learn? Like, I mean, I can give them a book. They still have to read it by themselves, you know? But I think, yeah. And like, to come to an end about the space, like the next thing, of course, I want to have is like, I want to have a workshop. And now I don't have the whole shop, but I just got a workshop that I'm going to start renovating tomorrow. So at least I'm going to have a space where I can do like workshops, and I'm going to like be able to Dremel the shit out of my machines and my frames and, you know, and just, yeah, kind of have a space that I can be creative and messy and not Dremel in the hallway of my building. My neighbors are going to appreciate that. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm starting there now. And if anybody wants to come around, solder some needles with me, I'm in Hamburg. Welcome.
And I think as well, I suppose as a point to finish on, like your art is incredible, both as like tattoos but as art, and it was something I was gonna say earlier on, it like it feels like a tattoo manifestation of like, you mentioned noise music earlier on, like music concrete as it's like farthest reaches, like the early like Coil albums, like the good Mark Rothko paintings. I know people have argued with me about whether Mark Rothko is good. Like, there's a kind of there's obviously like a kind of tenderness to your tattooing, but I think the starkness of it as well. There was a piece you posted in mid-March that I felt was so beautiful, and I'm sure it has like a deeply personal meaning to the person who got it and to you as the artist, but as like a piece of art, it's so striking because it's so like, it is abstract in the pure sense of the terms. And I suppose you're an incredible artist, and I want to thank you for coming on the show, but maybe I'm way off base, but you know.
Thank you. And which piece was it you're talking about?
It was the piece on the arm that went from the shoulder down to the mid forearm. It was just so beautiful, and I saw it, and I think I was listening to like an early Current 93 album when I saw it, and I was like, this feels like these two things are going together.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I totally relate to that, and also like I think what informs my abstract practice personally is just I think I'm very sentient, and I pick up, and I, you know, I'm not a hippie, but I want to call it energies. And it is a representation of energies and of flows. And I relate that directly to noise music and all of these things, because I think that they're the same expression, or that the expression of the same thing, but in another medium, you know? And I think that, yeah, when we can, like, when is it that things hit deep, whether it's music or an image or a tattoo, you know, it's when they have meaning, when they resonate with us, you know? And yeah, I think resonance is something that meets, like, yeah, the music. And it's funny, I tattooed a experimental music producer who's also a Reiki master, and I wasn't aware of it, but he, at one point, he was like, are you aware of all of the musical vocabulary you're using when you're talking about, like, you know, the rhythm and the tact, and, you know, and I wasn't, but, like, he made me aware of that. And and also of, like, yeah, he taught me a lot about, like, managing energies and approaching my tattooing through that angle. And I'm very grateful to him, Fred.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Metaphors. There's a great, book, by a linguistic theorist whose name I've just forgotten, but it's called Metaphors We Live By, and it basically points out that, like, you know, if you change the way you metaphorically talk about what you're doing, it changes your entire understanding of the practice. So the example in the book is, like, you know, we talk about discussion in terms of war, so winning a debate. You know, here's my kind of opening salvo in my, so we sort of view argumentation metaphorically often through metaphors of conflict, which isn't particularly helpful. And I think, yeah, this kind of metaphorical language about, I mean, obviously a lot of abstract art in art history was conceived of through musical metaphor, from, you know, back to Kandinsky. So it's really interesting to, like, You've stumbled, not stumbled across, but you've been sort of using that language to describe what you do without, you know, without it being deliberate. Mark Johnson and George Lakoff are the authors of that book, Metaphors We Live By. Really, really interesting book about how the words we use to describe what we're doing have a kind of framing effect on how we understand what we're doing.
Amazing. Yeah, well, I think that's a perfect place to leave it. Carol, thank you so much for talking to us about this. Is like an incredible conversation. I love when we get to get weird and deep on this show. If you want to find Carol and get tattooed, or, you know, hang out in a cool collective space, all the links will be below in the description of this episode. And also, we have to thank all of our patrons at the £10 above tier. Like I said last week, now that I have quit smoking, this is a lot easier to do in one breath. So without further ado, it's thank you to Stephen McCann, Roy Hoxema, Morpheus Ravenna, Chris Block, Charlie Lightning, Bobo Extra, Shit Jesus, Seb Lewis, Reed Ford, and Kirsten Wright, Kathleen Burkhardt, James Schick, and Dylan. Thank you to all of you. As always, there's stuff in the shop if you need a t-shirt to clothe yourself. We should have hats and beanies if you're so inclined by the time this goes out.
If you're ashamed of your naked body, clothe yourself from God's eyes wearing our merch.
Exactly. And if you are ashamed of your hairline, cover it with a hat or embrace it.
Even if you're not, I've got a great hairline and I wear hats all the time, so.
Yeah. And I have a terrible hairline and I don't, so. So, yeah, it's a thank you very much from me.
And thank you from me. Thank you so much, Caro. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing you in September.
It's August, isn't it?
August, whenever it is. Sure.
Are you coming? Yeah,
I am coming. Great. Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate what you're doing so much. I was one of your first fans, and now I'm so grateful and honored for the invitation. And yeah, see you soon.